This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Mary Nicholas. She's the president and CEO. And Jim Moyer, he's the director of survey quality at an organization called Healthcare Quality Association on Accreditation, commonly known as HQAA. Good morning. How are you two doing?
Good morning. Thanks very much for having us today.
Well, great, great, great.
Good morning, John.
You know, I was telling Mary before the show that we've had all the big dogs on, all the people from HHS, the people from the White House. We had Todd Park in here. We had Brian Civic. We have all these people that they do everything from 40,000 feet and they want to move to digital and assure quality and improve quality. But it's kind of fuzzy. And a lot of my listeners are scratching their heads going, well, how do you improve quality? Give me a for instance. Give me someone in here. Get Mary Nicholas in here and sit her down and say, okay, you want to improve quality in healthcare IT. Give me the specifics and how do you do it? And that's what HQAA is all about. And you've heard it and I've read it. The people in the White House say, we want to improve outcomes and reduce costs. Well, we're going to give you the reduced cost in working boots today. And that's why I want to have you both in here to talk about that. Healthcare IT in work boots. How does it work? What does it do? But before we begin, Mary, tell us about your background, where you're based, and how you wound up with HQAA, please.
Sure. HQAA is based in Waterloo, Iowa, and came about as a result of the Medicare Modernization Act of 2003. In that act, it was identified amongst the 1,500 pages, there was a few pages in that act that identified that any home medical equipment company or durable medical equipment company that wanted to build Medicare had to become accredited. This was new. This was breaking ground, a ruling that had not ever been put forth before. Now all of a sudden, accreditation is mandated. Well, at that time, there were less than five accreditation organizations that, in from my opinion, were going to be taking care of well over 100,000 companies that had Medicare billing numbers.
Shenanigans. That's what I think of. There were a lot of shenanigans back then.
I'll tell you, it shook the DME industry. Now, there were a lot of companies that were already accredited. They did so voluntarily. They wanted to identify that, look, they've complied with standards that set them apart from the rest. But now all of a sudden, everybody was going to become equal. Well, at that point in 2004, I had an opportunity to research whether or not a new accreditation organization could become a reality and become a reality for Medicare, who was going to be putting out an RFP and asking for accreditation organizations to apply so that they could become what's called a deemed authority. In other words, if a company, a DME company, were to be accredited by a deemed authority, that would be good enough for Medicare to allow for billing to occur.
And this is really public-private partnership right here. This is what it is in essence.
That's right. HQAA is a private, not-for-profit organization. And so I began research. I traveled all over the United States. I walked in on home medical equipment companies and I said, hey, are you accredited? Are you not accredited? I found out if they were accredited, why? What drew them to become accredited without even having a mandate to do so?
Let's jump over to Jim a couple minutes and we'll talk about a deeming authority. Jim, what's your background, please?
I actually came from the DME world. I worked 11 years in durable medical equipment in Northeast Ohio. Mm-hmm. I was operations manager. We had five locations and about 12,000 patients. I learned from the ground floor up exactly what you do, how you take care of your patients. You had to learn your FDA rules and regulations because we transfilled oxygen. We had to know how the drivers would react and how the paperwork and the competency. So I really worked from the ground floor up with the organization, and that's what really kind of drew me. I was one of the first surveyors for HQAA to ever have.
Wow.
and it just progressed through the ranks, and now I'm a director.
I was just in Northeastern Ohio for a triathlon 2 weeks ago, and Cleveland Clinic is huge there. I mean, this is where the people from Saudi Arabia come for their heart work. I mean, this is a huge, huge facility, and there's so much going on in Cleveland now as far as healthcare goes. And in fact, HIMSS has got a big project going on there, and I think that's a lot of innovation coming out of that area, and I think it's a lot better than people think what's going on there. There's just so much activity. Back to you, Mayor, real quick. A deeming authority. So CMS said, and we're not real sure about some of this money we're sending out. Maybe you want to get them approved or certified or accredited, maybe comply with some standards, and we're going to work with you. And we're going to say, no, Mary, we trust your ability to evaluate someone. So that's what HQAA does. It goes to supply place, durable medical supply, and finds out if they comply with standards that are set up by CMS. Is that right?
That's exactly right. CMS published in 2006 a set of what they call quality standards. And these were the minimum standards that needed to be met by the accrediting organizations to go out and review, validate, and observe that the DME companies were in compliance. And these were the minimum standards that CMS required of all the companies themselves. So HQAA built standards around the CMS quality standards, and we set up a system, all electronic. It's completely behind the scenes, electronic, interactive, with the DME companies that sign up to be with us.
So someone like Jim would go into Chicago and walk into an organization that wanted to be accredited, and he'd have a checklist, and he'd say, okay, we're going to sit down, and we're going to find out if you comply with the quality recommendations from CMS. And that's what your job is, or a lot of people like you, surveyors or site evaluators, whatever term you want to use.
Again, that's exactly right. We have about 35 surveyors at this point with our company,
yeah,
which is quite a few surveyors. And we do travel the entire United States, as well as Alaska, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands. So we travel the entire U.S. We have surveyors all across the United States, and we want surveyors that really understand the business. We want someone that has worked in the business. We want them to make sure that they have the passion and the understanding of what it takes to do the job correctly. So this is how we will go in, wear the feet in the door. We walk in, show that our name badge and our business card, and then we start the process. But the nice thing about it is, it being electronic, like Mary said, everything in the workroom, which is what these organizations will send their documents into, this workroom, as a surveyor, we can review that all ahead of time. So before we walk in, we have a pretty good idea of what that organization does, how they do it, and if they're compliant with not only the quality standards, but if they're compliant with their own standards. So that's how we review.
So if an organization does a self-study and they do the checkbox, yes, I have X, Y, and Z, well, that's all good and well. But what Mary wants to know is, do they really have X, Y, and Z? And so they physically have someone walk in and go, okay, now do you have the ventilator sitting there? And what condition is it? And what serial number is it? And has it been maintained? And those are important questions to ask, rather than some of the fraud that's taken place. I mean, I'll use the word. There's a lot of fraud in the medical area, and it's taken place, hasn't it?
Well, we look at everything. We look at everything from what's on the shelf to are people competent to do the job properly to are they billing correctly? And that's obviously some areas that Medicare wants us to look at, or what we call CMS. So some of the surveyors, when we go in, they have a huge background in something. It might be clinical respiratory, it might be rehab, it might be billing. So depending on where we go in, we designate that particular surveyor to target that particular organization to review whatever it is that they are proficient at. In other words, if it's a rehab company, we send in an ATP, someone that understands rehab. If it's a clinical company that does ventilators and all, we're going to send in an RT. So we have the wherewithal to have such a large group of people all across the United States with all kinds of backgrounds. It really does help.
You know, Mary, I was having breakfast with my wife this morning, and we talked about pioneers. And my wife said, yeah, I'm a pioneer, but we always get the arrows. But you, I'm like sitting across a pioneer right now. You were the one who scratched your head and said, well, I don't know. Maybe I'll put this thing together, and what do we got here? And you walk. I mean, so what are the challenges in just starting this up? I mean, this is, you know, it's been a while, but, you know, I'm sure there was a lot of confusion at the beginning here.
There was a great deal of confusion. And I guess it all became clear for me, as I said earlier, I was traveling around the United States, walking in on providers and suppliers and asked them why they were accredited, why they weren't accredited. And after a review of around 1,500 different providers, whether it was in writing, in person, in groups, in surveys, walking in on them, I learned a couple of things. I learned that people were not accredited because small providers, small independent business owners, they just didn't have the time. They were very busy keeping their businesses afloat. They also decided that, you know, they didn't understand it. They felt that accreditation was way over their heads. And they also said the expense. So those three things became the foundation for my creating HQAA.
So the challenge of being a pioneer in accreditation to reduce cost for healthcare IT. Let's take a quick break. We come back. We'll expand upon this idea of a certification or compliance with standards and how it actually works and talk about, well, give some details on how it does, in fact, save people money and reduce costs in the long run. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Mary Nicholas, President CEO, and Jim Moyer, Director of Survey Quality at HQAA. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Two guests in the studio today, we have Mary Nicholas, she's the President and CEO, and Jim Moyer, Director of Survey Quality at a group called Healthcare Quality Association on Accreditation, HQAA.org. For more information, they have white papers there, they have blogs, they have all kinds of information. Before we took the break, we were talking about, you know, making sure that someone who receives a check from the government is actually a valid organization and they comply with good quality standards. When I think of good quality, I think of, well, they change oil on the car, they make sure the electronic devices are up to snuff and they're correct for what they want to use it for. But I never think of the financial thing. We just stumbled on that. I mean, that's part and parcel of it. I think accounting procedures and correctly billing is part of being a quality organization, isn't it, Jim?
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, this is one of the whole reasons the fraud, waste, and abuse program started, was to check to see if the billing was being done correctly. These organizations, we're not there to make their life difficult. We're there to see that what they're charging and the reimbursement they receive, they get to keep. We're not trying to make it more difficult for them. We want to make sure that they are doing the right functionality. Because if they bill something incorrectly, there's a good chance that they will be paying that money back. So we look at modifiers, we look at the billing codes, we look at what they billed, how often they bill, what they are billing for, are they telling the patient what their cost will be. Is there certain forms filled out that the government requires them to have filled out? So it's a whole process. And one of the things I use and I created for our surveyors to use is an audit tool. So when they walk in, they have all the standards in front of them and they can do a little checkbox to say, okay, I don't want to miss this. I don't want to miss that. And let me see, well, okay, you use this modifier on this particular item. So what does that mean? Now, it's so many months, you have to use a different modifier. Did you do that? And we look at the entire billing cycle to see if they are getting paid. And if they are getting paid, are they collecting the additional percentage that they need to collect, or are they crossing over into another billing company, like a secondary insurance? So there's a lot of functionality to the billing process.
This insurance just kind of piqued my interest here, Mary. You know, I'm thinking that, well, CMS is going to examine a company to make sure they comply, make sure they're accredited before they can send them a check. But I would imagine that insurance companies want to make sure these facilities comply with standards as well. It would probably be a benefit to a facility for insurance claims in the government as well.
That's exactly right. Prior to 2006, or even 2009, when the accreditation became absolutely mandatory, there were several insurance companies across the country that did require accredited companies to be on their preferred provider list. But since then, since Medicare has made this mandate, more and more, I would be hard-pressed to find an insurance company that did not require accreditation anymore. So even if a company does not bill Medicare, for example, they still need to go through the accreditation process in order to validate for their local insurance companies, state insurance companies, even Medicaids in the country, that they do comply with quality standards and they meet a certain minimum of business standards.
You know, Mary, I've been to many HIMSS meetings, and I was at a two-hour HIMSS meeting when they talk about ICD-10 and coding and they went on, and it got very, very detailed, and I got bored. But I imagine there's a billion coding areas with HME as well, isn't there? There's got to be.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we found is when we first started, HQAA was working with brand new companies, companies that had never been through accreditation before. And when we go into survey, we would find that their billing files were a mess. We learned very quickly that they had companies doing their billing for them that were not exactly on the up and up. So that's why HQAA then ventured into developing an accreditation for billing companies. We're all a part of making the entire quality chain run through the healthcare industry that we work with. So we start with the DMEs, we get into the billing companies, and then we expand it into pharmacies and all the outliers, so to speak, of the whole DME industry. Whoever's got the Part B items that they're billing Medicare for or their insurance companies.
So, Jim, let's say you waltz into an organization in Roanoke, Virginia, and get out your checklist. Good, 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 good. Did the self-study. Everything's great. Well, so what? I mean, that could go downhill in 6 months, couldn't it? I mean, I've been around long enough to see, you get another human being in a school, a new principal, and things change. Another person managing a company, things change. So just the initial accreditation, I think that's the first step in a long process, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, it's a snapshot when we go in. We're looking to see how it looks today and what they've done in the past. Obviously, we're trying to set them up for the future so that they will continue to do correct billing, correct performance of how they take care of their patients. When I walk in, I think of that situation as if this was my mother or my uncle or my grandfather, how would I want that patient taken care of? And it's real important that the organization understand that from that point of view. It's not about how can I put a piece of equipment out and just leave it. It's about how do I take care of that patient's care? And so we look at things from a different perspective. And again, every one of our surveyors is from the industry. So we have the compassionate side that says, okay, we're here to work with you. We want to see what you're doing. We want to see how we can help you improve. And I have the luxury of, I've been to over 300 organizations. I've done over 300 surveys. So I have that luxury of saying, here's what I saw. Maybe this would help you if you do it this way. Now, if you meet the intent of the standard, good for you. That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. But here's something that might make it easier for you.
Here's what worked in Vermont. Maybe
exactly.
This might work for you.
Exactly.
That's not bad. Mary, I was exchanging emails with you last week, and at the bottom of your email, you have a SIG file, and it says, become a quality champion. I mean, that SIG file, I think many, many of my listeners, whether they're software developers, whether they work in healthcare IT, no matter what they do, whether they're auto mechanics, I think becoming a quality champion is kind of a generic goal for many people. But I think this accreditation process and inspection and compliance, this really puts it in work boots. And this says, yes, in fact, we are a quality organization, and let me show you why.
Well, and we want our customers to feel that just because they've acquired an accreditation certificate, it's really so much more than that. You know, the phrase, it's not the destination, it's the journey. I think that's totally applicable to the way that HQAA philosophy is imparted to all of our customers. It's not the destination. It's not getting that certificate to hang on the wall, but it's the journey of how did you get there? What did you have to go through? What did you improve along the way? And we want everybody to feel like they are a quality champion.
And I think what my question to Jim is, I keep thinking of the company in Roanoke. So you go in there and it's fine, and you may look at their billing procedures. But you know what? You may have to look at how they handle complaints. What if they get 5 complaints and they just toss them aside? Too bad. I mean, I keep thinking of the physical, okay, this is a device, a respirator, let's check it out, make sure it works, yes, it's compliant. No, but there's billing and there's also complaint handling.
Well, complaints, two of the supplier standards actually touch on complaints. So we do look at complaint. There should be a complaint form, a complaint log, something that documents what the complaint was, where it came from. Medicare requires certain criteria, like their healthcare information number, their identification number. They want to make sure that that person has gotten some type of a written response within 14 days. You have to follow up with it. So there's a whole process for complaints. And sometimes we will get keyed in on a complaint that comes from an outside source. So we need to go in and investigate that complaint.
Another part of being a quality organization.
Absolutely.
Mary, quality organizations, I was reading on your website about something called an MCO. Maybe you can share with our listeners what an MCO is and how you work with these MCOs.
Managed Care Organization, and that's typically an insurance company in a given state. And a lot of times we have on our website a page where all of our accredited suppliers are listed. We're very proud of those companies that have gotten accredited. And the managed care organizations that require accreditation, they'll go out to our website, and I see it 15, 20 times a day. They'll go out to our website and they'll look up a certain company that maybe has sent in an application to be a preferred provider, and they'll absolutely verify that they are accredited. So we feel that that's very important for insurance companies in spreading quality across the country.
You know, just from a personal perspective, if I were working for an insurance company, my goal in life was not to have headaches. I don't want to get involved in any billing dispute. I don't want to have someone like Jim complaining. I want things to go easy. And what you want to do is find out an organization you work with has complies with quality, because, I mean, it's going to reduce costs and it's going to reduce headaches for me, which is going to make me more productive in the future.
That's exactly right.
When it comes to CMS, Jim, we're about 30 seconds left here. I got 40 questions here. I'm just curious about CMS and these standards and when they set up the standards and changing standards and this whole idea of the mobile workplace and information on tablets and notebooks. It's kind of changing, especially with healthcare IT. Let's take a little break here. When we come back, we'll talk more about tablets and collecting information and protecting privacy information, because once you deal with healthcare IT, you have all kinds of very specific rules about what can be revealed, what can't be revealed. And I think it's much more sensitive than a lot of people realize. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Mary Nicholas, President and CEO, and Jim Moyer, Director of Survey Quality at Healthcare Quality Association on Accreditation. You get more information at hqaa.org. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we got double trouble. We have Mary Nicholas, President and CEO, and Jim Moyer, Director of Quality, Survey Quality at Healthcare Quality Association of America, HQAA.org. Go there for white papers and blogs. And wait a minute, you write blogs, don't you, Jim? Tell us, what's your blog?
Yes, I do. We try to write blogs so that the people that are actually going through the processes and understand that they have a better understanding of what we're expecting when we go out. You can interpret standards in a lot of different ways. So when Medicare puts out standards, we try to break that down into what we call small bites, so that they actually understand what we're there to look at, that they have things in place, that their processes are done properly. And moreover, that we want to make sure that they feel comfortable with what is expected of them. So many people are new in this business. There's a lot of companies that have been out there for eons, and it's great to walk into a company that really understands it. But the ones that are the newbies that really don't understand it, we can really help them.
So you write a blog, and people can go through hqa.org and read your blog. Yes. Let me ask you a question, Mary. This is a tough one here. So someone gets accredited. We touched on it earlier. So what's post-accreditation? How can you help someone, you know, those folks in Roanoke who got accredited? Now what, you just let them hang?
Well, absolutely not. You know, what we found after the first cycle of accreditation, which is a three-year cycle, when a company gets accredited, it's for 3 years. And then when we started to go back to some of the customers, we found that, gee whiz, they just kind of let things slide. And it took them a long time to dig back out of the hole, to get back into the compliance arena. So what we did was we developed an accreditation coordination toolkit, and it's called the ACT program. And it is an 18-month topic-related subscription where companies can subscribe for pretty minimum amount of dollars per month and get a piece of the pie that has to do with accreditation. We give them weekly checklists. We give them the opportunity to mail progress to other persons in the organization. And really for us, it was just a way to keep that accreditation fire kind of burning, just to make sure that there's something every week, every day, even once a month, that keeps that accreditation, all the hard work that had been put into it originally, alive. And so the accreditation toolkit was born.
Jim, I was watching some football on TV last night, and there's coaches around the side there. They have 45 different coaches, all kinds of coaches. You guys have coaches too, huh? You're not football coaches. Where do they coach? You got to coach them up, or what do you do?
We do have the coaches, and the coaches sit out in Waterloo, Iowa, in our office out there, and they help these organizations better understand, again, what's expected of them. If someone wants to, we ask a question. Let's say, again, I'm going to pick on competency, human resource competency. Is your staff competent to do the job that they're expected to do through their job description? Well, submit a document that shows what that is, what that competency is, what you expect from them, how you've done it. And then we have a coach. The coach will look at that and say, okay, you're missing about 3 points here. Yes, this looks really great, but you need to add a couple things here. And so they send it back to the person, or they can email, or they can call. We have conversations in various formats. That organization then has the opportunity to correct that, put it into place and say, okay, thank you, I got that. Now, I have a question about this. And that coach can walk them through each standard and help them better understand what it is that they're trying to prepare for.
Mary, if you go to your website, hqaa.org, there's a blog there, one on facility-based ventilator unit. I don't want to get real technical on this, but I know what a ventilator does, and I'm pretty sure that if you lose power to the ventilator, bad things happen. So I imagine part of the accreditation process is okay there, Mr. Jim, so you got a ventilator there. What's your backup power? Oh, you don't have any. Well, you know, what's reasonable? And this is a big problem, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. Facility-based vent unit accreditation is probably one of our newest products, and it was really born out of a need from the industry of several folks that manage and implement ventilator units within nursing homes. They asked us to look at developing an accreditation product. So in conjunction with the American Association on Respiratory Care, the AARC, HQAA put together standards, and now we'll go into nursing homes primarily, where third-party companies implement vent units. So we've got a variety of standards that absolutely includes backup power.
I was at the Datapalooza back in May, and Todd Park said, improve outcomes, decrease cost. But just this little thing of making sure a ventilator works. My mom was on a ventilator, 85 years old. And you can say, oh, yeah, it works. It's accredited. No. I mean, if bad things happen, then there's lawsuits. And then people are drawn into lawsuits. And then people point the finger at CMS and go, look at CMS. You're scamming us. And no, but I mean, this is really putting, this is very, very practical, dirty, you know, in the trenches, get your boots on, make sure this thing works, buddy, or you're not going to get paid. I mean, my mom was on a ventilator. That's really what it is, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, for so long, how many of us grew up knowing the good housekeeping seal of approval? Plenty of us. And by golly, if a toaster can have a good housekeeping seal of approval and we know that that toaster is going to be safe, shouldn't it be the same for healthcare? Shouldn't we as family members of patients demand a certain level of quality out there in the healthcare industry? And I think that accreditation is absolutely a part of that.
So, Jim, when you do your on-site visit as an evaluator or as a surveyor, do you use I'll ask you a question. Do you use a notebook? Do you use a tablet? Do you use a piece of paper? Index cards? What do you use?
We have a variety of surveyors that use different things. We have one surveyor that does everything via a tablet. We have one surveyor that does everything via a laptop. I'm old-fashioned. I like the paper. It's a checklist. It keeps me on target, so I know exactly where I'm at and what I'm doing. And if I need to do something the second day, I've got it circled, so I make sure I can go back and touch on that item, or I didn't see everything. We have a scoring tool that we use. A scoring tool is basically in-house to get to the end result, which is the narrative that goes to the organization, say, here's what we found. The scoring tool gives us a little bit more of where it's the surveyors have a percentage. Maybe this percentage, you're a score of a 5. Maybe this percentage, you're a score of a 3 or something like that. It keeps everyone on the same page. So you don't have one surveyor that says, no, everybody's a 5. You don't have one surveyor that says everybody's a 1. It gives them some scoring definitions. So that way, again, it's the base of that is to get to the narrative. And so we use these narratives to help that organization grow, understand, and be compliant. And like Mary said, that ACT program that we have, it really is a great tool that these organizations can use if they choose to. They can hand out a checklist that says, check your HR files for X, Y, and Z. Go to your vehicle and make sure that you've checked your fire extinguisher and your first aid kit and your eyewash if you're using eyewash and things like that. So that ACT is just an excellent program.
Mary, I'm on a committee at Georgetown that responds to student complaints, and we have a student who disputed a grade that she got. The grade was F. And there's a very formal procedure for going through disputes like that. I imagine there must be disputes. If Jim goes to Salt Lake City and grades someone a 3, they're going to pound on the table and go, hey, we're better than a 3. Does this happen?
It happens on occasion. You know, if once in a while a company who really feels that they put forth all the effort that they needed to in order to get accredited, it comes as a real surprise when a surveyor comes in.
In spite of the self-study, how much more
right.
can you do? What do you have to do, like lead them?
That's right. Well, we say from the very get-go, this actually came from Jim's co-director, that it's an open book test. We lay it
out. And we're going to give you the book ahead of time.
We're giving you the book. We're telling you what we're going to look at. We're identifying, you know, exactly what needs to be within your policies and procedures manual. And what you need to do by the time we get there is actually put your money where your mouth is or walk the talk.
Yeah.
You know, you've just got to, you've got to make it live in a part of the fabric of your whole organization.
So, Jim, someone in Salt Lake City says, yes, we have backup power for a ventilator. You say, well, great. I'm going to fly out there and take a look-see. And that's what you do.
That's
and all
exactly.
of a sudden, this is where the rubber meets the road. This is mm-hmm. where the quality gets applied. And this is where the lawsuits get avoided, is Justin, you showing up and asking the dumb questions. Oh, really? May I take a look?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things. Do you have that? Yes, I do. Good. I'd like to see it.
Oh, you want to see it?
Oh, well. It's not here right now.
It's not here right now. Your backup power is not here? No, I lost it.
So, you're right. That really is where the rubber meets the road. I mean, we're there to ensure that they are taking care of their patients properly and safely. And again, like you said, it really helps them. It benefits them from having a lawsuit down the road. So...
we're talking about collaboration, public-private partnerships, and mostly about improving outcomes and reducing costs in the long term for healthcare IT. We're talking with HQAA. We're going to take a break, come back. We'll talk more about Twitter and tweets and maybe give each one of these folks a test to see if they're card-carrying nerds or not. We'll find out here. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mary Nicholas, President and CEO, and Jim Moyer, Director of Survey Quality at HQAA, hqaa.org. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking about healthcare IT in work boots, exactly how it works, how to improve quality, public-private partnerships, and we have some folks in here from HQAA, that's called the Healthcare Quality Association on Accreditation. For more information, you can go to hqaa.org. And some of my listeners like to tweet and read tweets. Do you folks do any tweeting, or what does HQAA do for that?
Well, we do, actually. I try to send out two or three tweets a day that really have to do with how can I make accreditation a part of my everyday life. I'll tweet out our blogs. I will talk about quality. Hey, do you happen to need a worksheet on keeping track of your complaints? And I'll tweet out our blog addresses. And I really do try to pull in just some of those helpful hints to keep accreditation in your mind, accreditation alive for folks.
Yeah. I do some tweeting if you want to follow me. It's at Ray Gilray, kind of a lighthearted approach to tweeting. I talk about silly things and sports and accreditation, too, and some serious topics. I try to avoid the serious stuff because my students don't want that at all. Every guest who sits in the studio, Mary, has to take this grueling test. It's a 10-question test to see if you're a card-carrying nerd or not. So I'm asking you 10 questions and ask Mr. Jim the questions, and we'll see who the real nerd is in this room. Who's the one with the pocket protector and all that kind of weird stuff? So, Mary.
Can I just say I have pocket protectors?
Jim, you're getting whooped here.
She does.
That's a preemptive whooping.
That I want really some extra credit because I do
You walked own. Into a, you know, you walked into a gunfight with a knife, boy.
I really did. Trust me, I did.
Okay, how old are you, and what year did you get your first PC?
My first PC, I'm going to say 18 years ago.
Okay. So that's around mid-90s or something like that? Okay. That's okay. And when did you get your first cell phone?
Earlier? You think it was earlier?
I think it was earlier.
Jim's giving me eyeballs here. Yeah.
No, okay. It bolsters his case.
Kids.
First cell phone?
First cell phone, probably 1985.
Ooh, that's early.
Ooh.
And you have your own personal Twitter feed. We know that.
I do.
You have a Twitter feed?
We HQAA, know that. Yeah. Yep.
And you have your own blog?
On HQAA,
okay,
you bet.
Good. And do you use any online personal backup services?
I do.
Okay. Is one you want to share with us? Or Dropbox?
Oh, the cloud? Mm-hmm. Is the cloud one? Sure. Mm-hmm.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone 4S.
Okay. Number of apps on that you use regularly? That you use regularly is the key
use,
here.
Right, exactly. I'm going to say... 15,
okay. And here's a new question. How many tablet devices do you have? How many do you have in your home?
Oh, two mini tablets, one PC, one iPad, one iPhone.
Yeah. And what social networking sites do you participate in?
Facebook.
Mm-hmm. LinkedIn.
Probably LinkedIn.
And Mary, the last book you read, was it paper or plastic? Paper or electronic?
I... It was paper.
Paper. Well, Jim, I think you can...
But I'm reading an electronic book right now.
No. You already answered.
There's the buzzer. Okay, Jim.
I can't call him back. Okay.
Now, okay. When did you get your first PC, Mr. Jim?
It had to be about 1993.
Okay. And when did you get your first cell phone?
Cell phone, 1997.
Okay. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I don't. We do it through the HQAA.
Okay.
I know. She's going to get me on
now,
those.
Now, you do have your own blog. I know that, right?
I do, through HQAA.
And any kind of a personal online backup service you use?
The cloud.
Mm-hmm. Anything particular? Dropbox? Or
Dropbox I have used.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an Android.
Mm-hmm. And how many apps do you use every month on that?
It's got to be 17 or 18 because of my traveling so much.
Much neck and neck. So if I go to your house, how many tablet devices am I going to find floating around there?
You're going to find a couple tablets, probably three cell phones, and a PC, a laptop. Yeah, that's about it.
And what social networking sites are you active in?
Facebook and LinkedIn.
Okay. And here's the game changer. Last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was paper. In fact, I'm reading it on the plane out to here.
I tell you what, you know, this is a tough one. I'm going to have to go through my UNIVAC computer in my basement and find out exactly. Kind of neck and neck with each one of these answers, you know. It's surprising. One's more of an Apple, one's more of an Android, but this is really going to be tough to select the... we have to have listeners call in and say, no, I think Jim was a nerd here.
Yeah, there you go.
But I have pocket protectors.
Pocket protectors. Yeah, I think my kids don't even know what those are, but
right?
Some people do. And slide rules and pocket protectors, that's from too many years ago.
I was actually giving them away at a trade show once.
She was. She made
and
me
I
wear
still
one.
Have
she
a
made,
thousand left.
She made me wear one.
My guess is kids don't know about bow ties and pocket protectors.
Exactly.
You know, Mary, we've had some serious topics here, some light topics, and you know, one topic that's on top of my mind is October 1st and Obamacare and healthcare IT and reducing costs, and the mantra is reduce cost and improve quality, which is what you do. Do you have any perspectives on what's going to happen here? Maybe just focus in on your business and compliance and HMEs and durable medical equipment. What do you think this is all going to change in the next 4 or 5 years?
I don't think there's going to be a lot of change when it comes to the healthcare and efficiency and saving costs. I think accreditation will always have a place because there is a certain level of quality that is expected not only by the payer sources, but by the end users. Patients expect quality. Anymore, patients, you know, they don't have the patience to wait in an office for 45 minutes, 2 hours, 2.5 hours. You know, get online, look at it. Some docs put it out electronically when their next appointment is available and how long a wait there's going to be. I think that kind of efficiency is long overdue in the healthcare sector. If we can pin that on October 1st, okay. But I think more of the demand is coming from the general public, and it's also coming from the original sources of, you know, let's put quality in healthcare where it belongs.
Jim, I'm not going to ask about the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they lost the game last week. We're not going to mention that. And Super Bowl predictions. What about HQAA? What areas do you think they're going to grow in? Any kind of new targets? Any places you think you're going to head towards the next few years as far as compliance goes or medical devices?
I think we have a couple avenues that we're looking at right now. And I think one of the biggest things we're looking at right now is third-party billing. We have a program in place. We have some organizations that have gone through the third-party billing. But we're working with another major organization at this point to see about incorporating some work together.
It bounces back to the financial aspect of it. It's almost like being an auditor. It's that, okay,
yes.
You got the checkbox and everything, and how is your billing? Whoa, it's a little sloppy. Oh, really?
And it's amazing some of the things you find out there. There's a lot of people that want to do it right. There's a lot of people that tried to do it right. And if you miss the mark and you get money pulled back from you for the reimbursement, it's a shame and you feel terrible about it. And you're trying to help them better understand that at the beginning so they don't have that money drawn back. So the third-party billing is something that we're going to be pushing that a little bit more in the near future.
You know, Mary, some of these people obviously are scam artists and out to defraud the government, but many aren't. And I think that that's one of the challenges, I think, that you're going to work with people and say, okay, we're going to give you the benefit of the doubt. We're going to give you a coach. We're going to give you a checklist. We're going to do everything we can. We're going to send you tweets and remind you. We're going to send you a newsletter. I mean, what you're trying to do is at least let people aware of that so there's not any unintended consequences and bad things do happen.
That's correct. We try to lay down the track, and all they got to do is drive the train. And if people do have to take the initiative, it's not anything that is set on a silver platter and handed over. There's work involved. But for anything that's good and worthwhile, there's always work involved. Nothing is ever easy, but it's always worth the while to work for it to get to that goal that you want to accomplish. So we do. We try to give them the open book test. Here's all the materials. Here's everything you need. Here's the track. Drive the train.
So when the standards change, I imagine the standards that you walk in with have to adopt to what's going on with Medicare. Is that right?
That's correct. Medicare has really not made any major changes since 2006. They've made a couple of minor changes. They were pretty easy for us to adapt to. Our process is completely electronic. It's all online. It's a proprietary software that folks log into. And when Medicare makes a change, we make the change. Folks log in. They see the change. So there's really not a huge issue that occurs when changes happen.
HIPAA is going to have some changes coming up in January. Is that going to impact your business at all, or is that just a speed bump for you?
It's really not even a speed bump in that one of our standards indicates that the onus of responsibility is on the companies to follow federal guidelines. So we're getting a lot of questions right now. What does this mean for my company? And how, you know, what changes do I have to make? HQAA is not making any changes. Their standards are not going to change, but companies where the rubber meets the road, they are going to feel some changes.
And the way that data is being collected is changing. I mean, Jim hit on it. There are five people, five different ways. You know, five listeners, five different ways to get information. And maybe some person maybe have to be more concerned with their iPad rather than someone with a piece of paper. And that's just the way life is. Everyone's got different requirements. You just have to flex and try to adapt that standard to the process.
That's exactly right.
Well, good. We're going to have to finish up this interview. I'd like to find out more what's going on in 6 to 8 months of the world of accreditation, because I think there's going to be big, huge changes and no lack of guests for me in the next 6 months, I'll tell you that one, as it comes to healthcare IT. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Mary Nicholas, President and CEO, and Jim Moyer, Director of Survey Quality, an association called Healthcare Quality Association on Accreditation, HQAA.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.